Thanks for tuning in. Stick around for a while. We will dazzle and delight you. Okay, not that. At the bottom of this hour, we're going to do the first part of the Malloy podcast giveaway trivia quiz. Two lucky listeners will get podcast subscriptions to this program. And then at the bottom of the third hour tonight, we're going to do the same thing. Two more. And you know how to play. You just call in, and we'll take your call and ask you a question. If you get it right, you win. The bottom of the second hour tonight, episode 7 of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. And it's a little bit different tonight from what it's been. I think Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander, is evolving. You right-wingers should pardon the expression, but it is, or maybe metamorphosing. Is that a word, Kathy? Metamorphosing, metamorphosing. So stick around, all right? Once again, just an awful lot happening. It's kind of difficult to figure out where to start. Right before we went on the air, I got this thing from the Washington Post. I guess it was in today's paper. No, it's in tomorrow's paper. The guy that was arrested for murder of the security guard at the U.S. Holocaust Museum, Memorial Museum, last week in D.C. According to court documents filed by the FBI, authorities discovered child pornography on his computer. So, you know, right-wing terrorism in this country, usually, I don't know if usually is the right word, frequently, that's a better word, frequently goes hand in hand with child pornography. Have you noticed that? Yeah, me too. FBI agents said they recovered the computer during a search of the apartment where Von Braun, James Von Braun, lived for the past 2 years. The discovery was disclosed in a search warrant affidavit filed in federal court yesterday, seeking to make a more thorough inspection of the computer. Authorities did not disclose the type or extent of the child pornography they found on the computer during their first search. They also said they recovered from the apartment a 30-30 rifle, other computers, floppy disks, memory cards, cell phones, handwritten will, and what appeared to be, sit down, a painting of Hitler and Jesus. Oh, my God. Hitler and Jesus. Doing what? Embracing each other? They also had recovered 35 rounds of ammunition, a handicapped parking permit, and a salt shaker when they searched the car, which Von Braun had double parked outside the museum just before the shooting. They also recovered some other stuff, store receipts, business cards, advertising his website, holywesternempire.org. Oh, that was his website, holywesternempire.org. A roll of quarters, some mouthwash, 22 caliber ammunition. And, of course, Von Braun shot security guard Johns with a .22 caliber rifle. child pornography on the computer of another right-wing terrorist, domestic right-wing terrorist. Yep, that kind of holds with what we've come to expect from these miserable sons of bitches, the neo-Nazis and the skinheads and the O'Reillys and the Limbaughs. Child porn is something that they seem to enjoy, don't they? Little development in Iraq. The oil minister there, named Hussein Shahristani, which sounds to my untrained ear like more like an Iranian name, but anyway, the oil minister has decided that he is going to give international oil companies permission to come into his country and start drilling and sucking up oil in less than 2 weeks. He will award these contracts to the world's largest oil companies to develop six of Iraq's largest oil-producing fields over the next 20 to 25 years. Senior figures within the Iraqi oil industry have denounced the deal. The director of the South Oil Company, which is an Iraqi-owned company, and it comes under the oil ministry and produces most of Iraq's crude, said last weekend, quote, "The service contracts will put the Iraqi economy in chains and shackles its independence for the next 20 years," end quote. The puppet government that we installed there, what's his name? That's Afghanistan. What's the guy in Iraq? Yeah, I've forgotten too. It doesn't matter. Don't send it to me because I really don't give a tinker's damn who he is. He's our puppet. Our puppet says that doing this is not compromising the ownership of Iraq's oil reserves, the third largest in the world. No, 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 no. It's just a manner in which the Iraqis can get some money so they can repair the infrastructure that has been destroyed after after how many years? 30 years of war with Iran, war with us, our occupation, 10 years of sanctions between the two invasions of Iraq by the United States. So here we go. It's a done deal. The Independent of the UK, Patrick Coburn wrote this. The Independent of the UK says the development of Iraq's oil reserves is of great importance to the world's energy supply in the 21st century because those reserves may be even larger than Saudi Arabia's. Estimate 115 billion barrels. Oh, goody. Hold on to your Hummer. Hold on to your SUV. A new day is dawning. But, you know, it's not about oil. It was about bringing freedom and democracy and clean water and good electricity and nice education and good teeth and good eyesight to the Iraqi people. That's what it was all about, right? First President Bush, Bill Clinton, and second President Bush, right? Oh, and Mr. Obama, right? Huh? Huh? That's what it's all about. It's not about oil. God damn, who said it was about oil? Just those left-wingers, right? I am not a happy camper tonight where it concerns my president. I really am not. According to, there's a website, singlepayeraction.org, singlepayeraction.org. It's connected to Ralph Nader, I believe. And they have sent out, what would you call this, a press release, an internet release. In 2003, Barack Obama said he was for single-payer health care. 2003, that was back when he was in the Illinois legislature, I believe. So what would it take to get single-payer enacted? He said back then, quote, "First we have to take back the White House, the Senate, and the House," end quote. Okay, let's fast forward 6 years. The Democrats have taken the White House, the Senate, and the House. And what's Obama's position now? Well, if you remember, we shared this with you in a speech this week in Chicago before the AMA. Obama made clear he was now opposed to single-payer health care, as is his Secretary of Health and Human Services, former Governor Sebelius. It is off the table. Off the table. And we also shared with you that his lieutenants have suggested that Obama would support legislation to make sure that single-payer never becomes a reality in America. Isn't that lovely? Never becomes a reality in America. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So let's get this straight now. The United States, under the firm freedom-loving hand of three presidents, and now we're into the fourth, the United States has utterly and absolutely decimated, destroyed Iraq, destroyed its infrastructure, its bridges, roads, dams, electrical grid, power sources, telephone companies, everything. Its antiquities, its buildings, its rivers, lakes, streams, its farming capacity, everything. The United States has spent the past 14 years beating the Christ out of Iraq, smashing it, ruining it, burning it, killing its children, killing its men, women, killing everything, destroying, looting, raiding, burning. So why don't we provide the funds for the reconstruction? Huh? Anybody got an answer to that? No, of course you don't. I mean, you have the same answer I do, because that's not what predatory capitalism is all about. Predatory capitalism is about doing to Iraq what we've done and then telling Iraq, well, you need help with your reconstruction. You need money. Tell you what, we've got these oil companies over here. They'll come in and take care of things and give you a cut. Do you ever find it embarrassing to know that you live in a country that has a government the past 34, but especially the past four in your lifetime, our lifetime, that have done this? All these governments, the United States, actually five. You got to go back to Reagan and Herbert Derbert Bush and Clinton and George W. And now we're into Barack Obama. It's astonishing. Oh, but I digress. Single payer. It's off the table. Obama said back in 2003, in order to get single payer enacted, we have to take back the White House, the Senate, and the House. Now, there is no such thing. It's off the table. It's going to remain off the table. The release from singlepayeraction.org says there's only one explanation for Obama's flip-flop on single payer. The health insurance and drug corporations have a hammerlock on Washington, and Obama is going along to get along. No. So what's the net result? 60 Americans are dying every day due to lack of health insurance. That's from the Institute of Medicine report. Instead of getting single payer, or instead of getting behind single payer, Obama and the Democrats are engaged in what Dr. Marcia Angel, former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, calls, quote, the futility of piecemeal tinkering, end quote. And earlier this week, the Congressional Budget Office estimated that the most liberal of the Democrats' tinkering plans would cost $1 trillion over 10 years and still leave 37 million Americans uninsured. Single payer, on the other hand, would cost less than we're overpaying now and cover everyone. Zero uninsured. Single payer is not only the best option, it's the only option that will control costs and cover everyone. It will replace 1,300 insurance industry payers with one payer. It will save $400 billion a year in bloated corporate administrative and executive compensation costs. It will give free choice to the insured of doctors and hospitals. It'll use that money to insure everyone. No bills, no copays, no deductibles, no exclusions for pre-existing conditions, because under single payer, you're insured from the day you're born. No bankruptcies due to medical bills. No deaths due to lack of health insurance. It's cheaper, simpler, more affordable. Everybody in, nobody out. And according to recent polls, the majority of Americans, the majority of doctors, the majority of nurses, the majority of health economists want single payer. In almost every healthcare town hall event, you hear citizens speaking out for single payer. So, truth seekers, what in the hell is Barack Obama and the Democrats doing? This is the perfect opportunity. The Republicans have nothing to say about this. Screw the Republicans. The Republicans in Congress are already on single-payer health care. They already have the kind of insurance they do not want you to have. So corporate America wins again, right? Corporate America wins again. I've been watching these ads on television. There's one particularly egregious company. It's called CPRrights.org. That's the website. And the lies that they're putting out there about single payer, I mean, it's just astonishing. Astonishing. And all they're doing is muddying the issue because Obama is not talking about single payer. This is driving me crazy. How about you? Is it making you crazy? This is driving me crazy. Everybody wants it. It's what we need. It's the only thing that'll work. So why is Barack Obama and the Democrats who control the White House, the House, and the Senate, why are they saying, no, it's off the table? Well, you know the answer as well as I do, don't you, Truth Seeker?
Because liberal is a good word. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is about 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. As promised, if you would like to get online now, we are going to play Malloy podcast trivia. The number is 877-996-2556. That's 877-996-2556. And the way we play it, of course, once you are online, or on the telephone, I should say, ready to rock and roll, then we will take your call and ask you some multiple choice questions. And once again, this week they're about Bush. And all you have to do is answer right and you win. And these podcast subscriptions are courtesy of one of our listeners who wants to remain so anonymous. I don't think I even know what his name is. I think I do. That's right. I saw the original email and then sent it on to our business manager. So through the good graces of our anonymous donor, we have 10 of these to give away. We gave away two last week on Friday. Normally, we're going to do this on Friday, but since tomorrow night's broadcast is a replay, we're doing it tonight. And then next Friday, when Kathy and I are still on some time off, of course, we're not going to give them away. Neither will Brad Friedman, who will be sitting in for me. But when we come back the following Friday, we will give away four. Count them. 4 podcast subscriptions that particular Friday night. All right. While we are waiting for Kathy to get all the pertinent information, we have, I think we have our 3 players now, so or 3 players that we can get to. So if you want to hold on for just a moment, because we have podcast trivia, free subscription, theme music. We do a dance. Speaking of theme music, don't forget, in 1 hour from now, we're going to be playing episode 7 of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander, and you're going to love it. And that has theme music, too. Although, like I said earlier, that Radio Gumshoe seems to be changing. I'm not quite sure how to put it. All right, are we ready to play the game? Yes, we are. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Podcast Trivia on the Malloy Program. Each week we give away 2 free podcast subscriptions to the Mike Malloy Show, courtesy of an anonymous donor, but I already said all this, so I guess I don't have to say it again. Let us cut the music and move to our first player. Would be Sandra, who is calling from Berkeley, California.
Yes, I am.
Hi, Sandra. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
What? Why do you want a podcast free subscription to this crazy program?
Well, have I told you lately how much I hate them?
Well, it's good enough. All right. We are ready. Are you ready for the first question?
I'm ready.
Okay. Here we go. Now, this is multiple choice. Complete this Bush quote regarding the perils of dependency on foreign oil. This is what he said. Quote, "It is clear our nation is reliant upon big foreign oil. More and more of our imports come from A, overseas, B, Saudi Arabia, C, Pier 1, D, evildoers."
Well, I want to say D, but I think I have to say other countries, or whatever that one was, the first one, I think.
The first one, overseas?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Let me take a look. Yes! Yes! Oh, my God! You won! Woo! Sandra in Berkeley, California, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, has just won. All right, Sandra, you know how this works. We're going to put you on hold now. And in a moment, after we finish getting our next next winner, Kathy will take the pertinent information. We'll get this to you, okay?
All right.
All right, Sandra, just hold on. Don't you dare go away.
All
just
right.
Stay right there. Oh, we wait until the third hour to do the next one. I see. Okay. Okay. Sorry. All right. Sandra, stay there. Don't leave. And Sheila, who's been holding on for the game, and Mike in Southport, Florida, holding on for the game. You'll have to wait until we get to the bottom of the third hour of the program tonight for our next winner. I have trouble with these simple rules. I just can't seem to process them. Well, that was quick. Way to go, Sandra, in Berkeley, California. All right, now listen. Let me say this to the for the people who will be listening. When if you live in a city or a market where this program is delayed for 2 or 3 hours, if you know that you live in that city where the program's delayed, when you hear this, don't call in because it will already have happened. Does that make sense? No, it doesn't. Don't even try to explain it. Never mind. Okay, where are we? Dennis Liu, who writes for Salon, or he does at least in this particular instance. I got to share this with you. Bob sent this to me with the subject line, a big uh-oh looming. We talked about this, I don't know what, a couple of years ago? During the fevered height of the Bush crime family. And as Dennis Liu has written at Salon, he tries to explain that the Department of Defense is training all of its personnel. Now, Do you get that? The Department of Defense is training all of its personnel. That'd be what, 1.5 million people? How many people do we have in uniform? Anyway, all of its personnel in its current, the Department of Defense's current anti-terrorism and force protection annual refresher training course. That's what it's called. Now, the introduction to this training course reads as follows. Anti-terrorism, herein referred to as AT, and force protection, herein referred to as FP, are two facets of the Department of Defense, herein referred to as DOD, Mission Assurance Program. It is DOD policy, as found in DODI 2000.16, that the DOD components and the DOD elements and personnel shall be protected from terrorist acts through a high-priority, comprehensive AT program. AT, anti-terrorism. The DOD's AT program shall be all-encompassing using an integrated systems approach. End quote. Now, that's kind of the introduction. The first question of the terrorism threat factors knowledge check one section reads as follows. The multiple choice question. Which of the following is an example of low-level terrorism activity? Select the correct answer and then click check your answer. Is it A, attacking the Pentagon? B, IEDs? C, hate crimes against racial groups? D, protests? Yeah, the correct answer is protests. You get that? An example of low-level terrorism activity in the United States is protests. Now, it doesn't say political, labor. It doesn't say librarians out on strike for higher pay. It doesn't say people who would like to see the end to animal vivisection. It doesn't say people who are protesting the slaughter of whales or baby seals. It just says protests. That now is an example of low-level terrorism activity. The ACLU learned of this training and on June 10, 2009, sent a letter to Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, Gail McGinn, objecting to the training of all DOD personnel that the exercise of First Amendment rights now constitutes low-level terrorism. You know, First Amendment, the right of the people to protest. That's not what it says, but right of the people to peacefully petition their government for redress of grievances is now considered low-level terrorism. And as Dennis Liu writes, for those who have worried about a trend evident, for example, in the USA Patriot Act, the universal and ongoing government surveillance of all of Americans' electronic communications that began in February 2001, 7 months before 9/11, the global war on a tactic, terrorism, therefore making this war unending and unprecedented. Where it concerns preemptive arrests of protesters, this should really get your attention.
because liberal is a good word. It's More Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. So Dennis Liu writing at Salon about what we can expect. As he says, for those who have worried about a trend, evident, for example, in the USA Patriot Act, universal and ongoing government surveillance of all of Americans' electronic communications that began in February 2001, the global war on a tactic that would be terrorism, therefore making this war unending, the unprecedented preemptive arrests of protesters at the 2008 Republican National Convention, with those protesters being charged as, quote, domestic terrorists, end quote, the justification for torture, preemptive wars of aggression, ongoing occupations, American gulags such as Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan, suspension of habeas corpus, and prolonged detention for acts someone might commit, not what they've done, FBI infiltration of protest groups, and the government's acknowledged use of undercover agents, agents provocateurs in said infiltration, thus giving the government, under the rubric of fighting domestic terrorism, unrestrained and unsupervisable power to suppress legitimate political activities, the unleashing and justifications for Christian fascists to murder those they do not like, such as the assassination of Dr. George Tiller and the killing at the Holocaust Museum a few days ago. This news adds further fuel to the fire. These are not items from some famously vilified non-U.S. dictatorial regime. These are items from the good old USA. Land of the free, home of the brave. So just how brave are we now? Are we brave enough to be winter soldiers and stand up against these fascist moves? Or will we go down in history, in infamy, the way the good Germans of the 1930s and 1940s did? I hate things that point out disturbing truths to me. Don't you? I just hate it. Which of the following is an example of low-level terrorism activity? Attacking the Pentagon? Nope. IEDs? Nope. Hate crimes against racial groups? Nope. Protests? Bingo! Well, of course, because protests are usually directed against some form of corporate power. Whether it is a strike, that's now considered an act of low-level terrorism, or a protest against government policy, and the government is pretty much owned outright by corporate America. So this force anti-terrorism and force protection plan, the training course, is designed once again, and this noose is getting tighter, truth seekers. It's getting tighter. It really is. It's just, for some reason, an invisible noose. All of this is being done to protect corporate interests. Period. End of story. And what are we doing? You know, we make great comments, and aren't you getting a little bit tired, oh my God, of the Iranian protests? Aren't you? I mean, really, you know you are, especially when you realize that Mousavi is no different from Ahmadinejad. He really is not. In the same manner that Bush and Clinton were exactly the same, Barack Obama and Clinton are exactly the same. So I guess when you're comparing equals to equals, what are you left with? Barack Obama and George Bush? Oh, shudder, shudder, shudder. But aren't you, I mean, are you not sick of the twittering, the tweeting? I discount the genuine fervor of the Iranian people to be free of the yoke of the kind of state fascism slash religiosity that's being forced down their throats. People of Iran don't want that. They want to live like the million Iranians who, the way they live in Southern California. But the reason it's starting to sicken me is because while we are all enthralled with revolution porn, I don't know what else to call it, that is cascading across our television sets. CNN has given up everything else, haven't they? Every time I turn on CNN today, there it is. You know, more of these shaky, goofy, goopy cell phone videos or whatever the hell they are that really doesn't say a thing. Nobody knows, are these pro-government protesters or anti-government protesters? Do they back Mousavi or Ahmadinejad? But it's become... call it what you want, revolution porn, protest porn. That's all it is. We just sit here and watch it. Oh, goddamn, look at that. Oh, they got that guy right in the head. While the noose over here gets tighter and tighter and tighter. I wonder if someday, and the day will come, it will come, you and I might not be around to see it, but the day will come when the United States finally... the people in this country will revolt. You know it's coming. You know it is. It's going to be brought about by these suppressive laws and the economic collapse that is just creeping up on us like global warming. You know it's going to happen. You know it is. But I wonder if when it does happen, if Iranian television or Al Jazeera or maybe the Chinese will sit back and watch revolution porn from the United States. Oh, look, they're tweeting each other. Oh, my. Now they're talking about running down to the Washington Monument. Oh, somebody just got their head busted at the Jefferson Memorial. Ooh, somebody was just pushed off that huge big chair that George Abraham Lincoln sits on at the Lincoln Memorial. Oh, my goodness. Look at these Americans. Ooh, they're just shooting. And how many are dead now? 420 Americans shot dead. My goodness. Well, I certainly hope they work it out. I really do. It is 7 past the hour. One of the things that Mr. Liu left off writing at the salon was, remember National Security and Homeland Security Presidential Directive, also referred to as Directive 51? Remember that? That was the directive that was signed by George W. Bush, created and signed by him, well, not created by him, it's created by Dick Cheney, probably, back in May of 2007. And it claims power to execute procedures for continuity of the federal government in the event of what was referred to as a catastrophic emergency. And how do they define that? That emergency is construed as, quote, any incident, regardless of location, that results in extraordinary levels of mass casualties, damage, or disruption severely affecting the U.S. population, infrastructure, environment, economy, or government functions, end quote. So a mass demonstration in this country, not unlike what is going on in Iran right now, could put into play the National Security and Homeland Security Presidential Directive number 51, which means the Constitution is immediately suspended. And in its place, martial law. Now, I don't know if it takes a declaration of martial law or if martial law is just instituted when Directive 51 is put in play. So what do you think? You scared yet or not? Huh? I don't know. Who knows? Steve, who is living in the evil shadow of the new Bush Library in Dallas, Texas, writes in and says, Mike, in spite of what he may have said when he was an Illinois state senator, we probably need to remember that Obama never promised to support single-payer health care during the campaign. As I remember, Paul Krugman wrote several columns criticizing the inadequacy of Obama's health care plans while he was still a candidate. Krugman also told us that the best way to get to know a candidate is to listen to what he actually says. But I guess many of us have problems with that approach. I bring this up not because I'm opposed to single payer, but because I don't think the president practiced bait and switch tactics on this issue. He told us from the start that he wasn't going to support what most of the people wanted. We just weren't listening well enough. Well, that may be true. Okay, Steve, I've said before that Barack Obama presented himself as kind of, sort of, a blank slate where it concerned his policies. You really had to dig. Towards the end of the campaign, when I started following my own advice and digging, what I found was kind of spooky, and I talked about it on the air, and I went so far as to say, don't kid yourself, this is not a liberal. This guy is not a liberal. He's not a liberal! And, you know, the abundance of email that came in accusing me of, from the most extreme, being a racist. That's what they always say about me when they always say anti-Semite when I talk about the plight of the Palestinians. But never mind. From being a racist, because I said Obama's not a liberal, to being grossly misinformed about what he was all about. So, yeah, I hear you, Steve. And I certainly was among the millions of Americans who wrote upon the blank slate of Barack Obama whatever we wanted. And I guess the reason we did that, not to justify it or rationalize it, but to explain it, the reason we did it is because we were coming out of 8 years of the Bush crime family, 8 years of the smarmy Bill Clinton, who would smile at you with one hand and cut your guts out with the other, and 4 years of the insufferable George Herbert Walker Bush, and 8 years of the Reagan Revolution that set the entire country on this road to destruction, financial destruction, with the incredible spending that occurred during the Reagan year. Reagan tried in his 8 years to bankrupt the country. That's what the right wing has wanted to do for a long time, so that everything has to be privatized. Everything. And that will leave, let's refer to it as neo-feudalism. That's like the lord of the manor who lives in the great stone castle on top of the hill and the rest of us are down here picking potatoes. Oh, but here's somebody who is not wanting single payer. That would be Michael in Huntsville, Alabama. You don't want single payer?
I don't think I do.
Why not?
Well, I'm a school teacher and I don't have a lot of experience with any government entity where a single payer is involved. As an educator,
Let me jump in. You don't have any experience with single payer because we don't have it.
Do we have single payer in any government entity?
Well, no. It only refers to, well, I guess the military, but the it refers to healthcare. Right now, we have a 1,500 payers. These are the private insurance companies. 1,500. And single payer means you have one person or one organization that pays the bills. That would be the federal government.
Right.
And the way it pays the bills is the same way that single payer, the only place we have single payer right now is Medicare. Medicare, are your parents getting Medicare? Do you know any old people on Medicare?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes.
That's single payer.
Okay.
Only not quite. That's 80% of single payer, because I think that's what people pay, or that's what Medicare pays for a doctor's visit. But it means an old person who goes to a doctor and the visit costs $200, that old person is going to pay $40. Do you have a problem with that?
I think that there's certain populations of the United States that should be protected and have free health care completely.
What populations?
Namely children. I think that, you know, from birth to age 18, at least, there should be, you know, free health care.
Okay. Well, no, wait. There's no such thing as free. Who's going to pay for it?
Well, the taxpayers.
Okay.
Come out of,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And why do you think people from birth to 18 should have a single payer health care?
I think that population of people, of children, are not able to get their own jobs. They're not able to provide for themselves. They're not able to take responsibility to, you know, get a job or do whatever it takes to pay for their own health care.
Okay, what about people, as we have right now, millions upon millions upon millions of people who have been fired or laid off or lost their jobs, and through the jobs, they were getting health insurance. Does it make sense to you, I'm serious, does it make sense to you to have an employer paying for your health insurance? That's insane, isn't it?
Well, I don't know.
Now, you're a school teacher. Don't fall behind the I don't know. Use your logical, rational mind. Does it make sense to you to have your health insurance provided by your employer?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, then who provides it?
I think that we should each provide our own. I mean, we should buy as individuals,
but,
we should buy whatever health care we want.
But why would we do that when in doing that, if we do that, which is what we're doing right now, we are dealing with companies whose sole function is to make a profit, A, and B, in order to make that profit, deny your claim. The insurance companies are not in business to keep you healthy. The insurance companies are in business to collect your money and deny your claim. Have you never had a claim denied?
I don't think I have, no.
Never?
I mean,
I'm
pretty young and pretty healthy, and I don't.
Okay, happens when you're not so young and not so healthy? What happens if you? What happens if you discover, God forbid, that you have some life-threatening disease and you start treatment, and your private insurance company says, "Sorry, this is a pre-existing condition."
Well, then I'm going to have the responsibility to pay for it myself.
No, you're not. You're going to have the responsibility to go bankrupt and leave your wife and your children enormously under a mountain of debt when you die. That's what you're going to do. How are you going to take the responsibility to pay for it if you have, I don't know, let's pick something, pancreatic cancer?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
well,
you know,
okay.
But
let's eliminate. But wait. Let's eliminate the I don't know.
Well,
I'll put you on hold, and I'll come back after the break because you intrigue the hell out of me. You are making an argument against your own best interest, and I'm intrigued by what you're doing. So we'll come back to you, Michael, in a minute.
Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour, and we're talking with Michael. He's called in from Huntsville, Alabama, who is Republican and doesn't want single payer. And you know what, Michael? You have not given me a logical or rational answer to the question of why you don't want it. So far, you say you're a teacher. Do you have a health plan paid for by your school system?
Yes, sir, we do.
Okay. Why don't you give it up?
I can't give it up.
Sure you can. They would love you for it because most school systems, especially in Alabama, are going bankrupt. So they would love it if all of you teachers said, okay, we don't need it. But let's bypass that for a second. You don't have to tell me how much it costs, but without the support of the school system, it would probably cost you around $15,000 a year, which you may find out if you ever lose your job and have to go on COBRA. What are you going to do then?
well, I'm just going to have to rely on.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. Please, you're a school teacher. Don't give me those. If your students, I don't know what grade you teach or what subject, I'm not interested. But if you said to your student, how much is two and two? And they said to you, well, I don't know. It could be four. I don't know. I'll have to check. No, don't do that, Michael. You're a school teacher. Why are you against single payer?
The way I see it is, I take as an analogy my home. I pay for housing insurance. If something happened to my house and I made a claim and my house insurance rejected the claim, I would still have to have shelter. I would still pay to have it. I wouldn't expect the government to come in and say, well, we're going to have a single payer homeowner insurance.
No. That is the worst analogy or the worst comparison I've ever heard. If you want to go with that, okay, your house catches fire and you burn to such a degree that you're paralyzed for the rest of your life. Now what do you do? The analogy is very, very shallow, for lack of a better word. Michael,
you still have not, look,
I have given over this program to you to tell you, to let you tell America why you're against single payer, and you haven't done it yet.
Well, another thing that I'm afraid of, Mr. Malloy, is that if we all go ahead and agree to single payer, then I'm afraid of the slippery slope. I don't know what is going to be next, and that scares the hell out of me.
Well, now wait. Here you go with the big bag again. Slippery slope to what?
Well, maybe next will be homeowners insurance.
Oh my God! Wouldn't that be horrible? Homeowners insurance that is handled by the government. Which means when it's handled by the government, you're a teacher, government of, by, and for the people. I realize that's very quaint sounding now because it's owned by corporations. But if we did have single payer insurance for everything, that just means, you know what it means? It only means that all of us contribute into the pot. Young, old, healthy, sick, dying, everybody contributes into the pot. And then the pot is so enormous. Do you know who does not take out of the pot? Insurance companies, administrators, lawsuits. None of that comes out of the pot. You know what comes out of the pot? Health coverage. Oh, what a crazed idea. Come on, Michael. Stop.
Well, another thing, Mike, is that I don't feel that I should be obligated to pay for the health care of people that are not as
you're doing it. You're doing it now.
Well, you mentioned people who lose their coverage because of pre-existing conditions.
Michael, you're not that self-referential and self-centered. Are you a Christian? I'll bet you are. Let me put it this way, Michael. When you pay, whatever your premium is to your health insurance through your school system, you are in fact paying into a pool out of which comes, whatever medical coverage they can't deny, retired teachers, old
right.
teachers,
right.
sick teachers, you're
yeah.
already doing it. But what
I
you,
know.
But
that's
what,
I said,
but,
I wish
but,
I could get out.
But, and get into what?
Well, if I could get out and they could reimburse me for the money that I pay in. So
oh my God,
saying,
you're living in, Michael, do you believe in fairies and elves? I mean, you're living in a fantasy world. Do you think at the end of the rainbow there is a leprechaun that's sitting on a pot of gold? Come on, Michael. What are you talking about? You would get out of your school system health plan and get into what? Another health plan.
Right. But then I could take one.
What do you mean, right?
I would take the money and I would put it in a health care plan of my choosing where I could bear the responsibility and not have to the premiums higher.
But,
just like in my car.
But why
if
do
I want
that,
to pay
Michael?
A deductible.
But Michael, why do that? You're interested in protecting yourself, your spouse, and your children. I'm building an imaginary family for you. I don't know what you have. You're protecting everybody. Why do you want to give it to an entity that takes 35% out as profit? Why do you want to do that?
Well, because I think that that's a better option than give it to the government, who I don't have a lot of trust in. I don't think that.
But
they
the
government, gonna...
but the government has nothing to do. The government just pays your doctor because you are paying into an enormous kitty into which 300 million other people are paying into. And you go to your doctor or you go to your specialist or you get your surgery and the doctor sends the bill to the feds. End of story. And it's paid. Michael, I don't know what to say except I've got to end the conversation. Good luck. I hope everything works out. Thanks for checking in, Michael.
Too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're about to delight you with another episode of Radio Gumshoe, Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. But after we do that, I guess I'll come back to the emails that you all have sent in, a couple of them about Michael. I'm not going to bust him now that he's on the phone, or not on the phone, but I can't understand that. How does somebody become so convinced that the only way to have health insurance is to give it to a company, any company, that then does everything in its power to deny your claim? For whatever reason, well, the circumstances of your illness were such that we're not paying. Well, you went to the wrong doctor. Well, you can't go to a specialist. Well, this is a pre-existing condition. Well, I mean, on and on and on. And for some reason, Michael thinks, okay, well, I'll just drop that in a company and go to another one. They all do this. And the idea of single payer, it's already here. I mean, it's called Medicare. It works. How do people get to that point? And no offense, Michael, if you're still listening. I'm sure you have a lot of stuff on your mind. But my God, and to talk about a slippery slope, what slippery slope? Well, my house insurance might be paid government. No. That's crazy thinking. That's Rush Limbaugh thinking. That's Sean Hannity thinking. Do you think they give a damn about whether or not you have health insurance? They are shills for corporate America, Michael. They say the garbage they say 24/7, coast to coast, border to border, because they are shills for corporate America. Meantime, you and I dangle by a goddamn thread where it concerns our health insurance. Oh, you're healthy and young now. What happens when you're not? Either one or both. Come on, Michael. Wake up, please. Wake up. Let me pause and catch my breath.
From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, have you heard the news?
This is the country, the United States of America. At last count, there were over 300 million citizens. According to Gallup polls, one-third of them always votes Republican. 47% believe that the Earth is only 6,000 years old, and the average American reads 0.9 books a year. That means on any given day, you've got about a 50-50 chance of talking to a crazy, stupid person. My name's Malloy, Mike Malloy. I cover the Bush crime family.
The story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Hey, Truth Seekers. It was Sunday, May 24th, 9:45 a.m. I had just finished printing out a project I'd been working on for months when Kathy came in with the dog.
Hello, Malloy. What have you got?
This is the Bush crime family timeline, Kathy. I've listed everything they've done over the last 8 years.
Oh, that's pretty long.
And I'm not done with it.
What's left to do?
Well, in covering these crimes, I've got to answer six questions. Who, what, when, where, how, and why. We know everything but the why.
Sure we do. What's wrong with the old standbys, power and money?
With these crimes, it comes down to who made it happen and who let it happen. You know, we spend most of our time looking at Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and the rest. But I think the real story is in finding out who let it happen.
So you're going after...
Yeah. We're on the trail of the average American. 10:30 a.m. Kathy and I drove over to the nearest church. We didn't go inside to listen to the weekly death and blood cult sermon. Kathy and I just looked for 8-year-old cars in the parking lot, the car of choice for the average American. The service ended, and we watched as a couple in their mid-30s with 2.09 kids get into a van and drive off. 12:15 p.m. As soon as he dropped off the wife and kids, our average American hopped back in the car and drove off. We followed him to the outskirts of the city where he parked in the lot of a traveling carnival.
Mike, what's he doing here? He should be home sitting in front of the television for the next 5.3 hours.
Let's catch up with him. I don't want to lose him on the midway.
He's over there, next to the Guess Your Weight booth.
Yeah, but he's watching the barker up on the stage. Let's get closer.
Yowza, yowza, yowza. Step right up, folks, for the miracle of the ages. Forget all about it with just one of Dr. Carl's little blue pills. Get away, kid. You're bothering me here. The cost absolutely free and absolutely guaranteed. Step right up and get your little blue pill. And don't forget to wash it down with a nice, cold, complimentary glass of conservative Kool-Aid. No need to rush, folks. There's plenty for everybody. Yowza, yowza, yowza.
Why does everyone line up for the blue pill? The red ones are free, too.
I guess most people don't want to wake up in a bathtub full of goo with a vacuum hose sticking out of the back of their neck and find out they've been controlled all their lives by a right-wing machine. Kind of takes the fun out of watching American Idol.
Watch it, Mike. He's leaving.
1:30 p.m. Kathy and I caught up to him just as he was about to buy a ticket for the afternoon show. Excuse me, Mr. Smith. Before you go in, I've got a few questions to ask about why you didn't do anything over the last 8 years while the Bush administration destroyed the country. Smith looked at Kathy, then at me, and then he panicked. He took off running down the midway.
Where'd you learn the subtle approach, Malloy? Building rapport 101?
Sometimes I can't help myself, Kathy, when I think of everything that's happened since the Bush crime family took power, and I finally catch up with one of the lazy, miserable slobs that let it happen. Well, we can discuss my interviewing techniques later. Did you see where he went?
No, but Asta did. Come on.
We followed the dog to a dead end between two of the tents. And there he was, cowering next to the geek pit while Asta kept him at bay.
Come here, boy. Good dog.
Like all criminals, he had an elaborate alibi.
I didn't do nothing. Like I said, I didn't do nothing.
Get this and get it straight, Meatball. Conservatism's a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or maybe a grave. There's no other end, but you'll never learn. Come on, Kathy. Let's call the cops and get out of here.
Well, did you find what you were looking for? The why?
Yeah, I guess I did. Most people didn't do anything because they were afraid. Doesn't make any difference what they're afraid of. Afraid of people who are different or afraid of what the neighbors might say. Afraid it might be too much trouble. Who knows? The right wing plays the fear card. And these chumps fall for it every time.
The story you have just seen is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On July 20th, trial was held in Department 184, Superior Court of the State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
Yowza, 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 besieged by right-wing flesh-eating zombies? Can't take the daily onslaught of conservative cacophony? Well, for only $59.40 a year, become a member at MikeMalloy.com. For only one-fourth of a dollar, that's one quarter per show, you can protect yourself with a daily dose of sanity. Cheaper than garlic and more convenient than crucifixes. Don't delay. Subscribe today.
George Bush, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, and Karl Rove have not been indicted on any charge and are not awaiting trial. The average American citizen was found guilty of criminal indifference to the fate of their country and sentenced to live with the aftermath of the Bush administration's crimes for generations. Lose a nail if I keep doing that. uh. Well, it began abruptly and ended abruptly, but so did The Sopranos. Tonight's episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gum Show, written and produced by Bob Alexander, performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. And frankly, that's becoming the favorite part of this program for me. Whew! I love it. Michael, the healthcare caller. Couple of emails. Poway Skip writes in, Mike, if the Democrats would power through single-payer universal health care, they would not ever have to campaign again. They would get reelected forever just for giving us that. I was thinking that campaign finance would have to occur before this would have a chance, but thinking about it now, I think it could work. We just have to convince the cowards. This is from Jack, who wanted me to ask the teacher regarding health care. Jack writes, please ask this guy who doesn't apparently think ahead, what would he do if he had the money for health insurance, but because of his age, say 48, he's all of a sudden not such a good risk. And the insurance companies, say Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, denies coverage, labels him uninsurable, and blames the decision on the fact that he had a doctor-ordered colonoscopy a year before. Try getting any health insurance when you are labeled uninsurable. Thank you, health insurance corporations. We'll be back after the break.
Talk like an angel, but I got wise. You're the devil in disguise. Oh, yes, you are, devil in disguise.
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Okay, a few emails regarding Michael the caller. This is from Leslie. Mike, thanks for articulating your argument with this caller about health care. He, like many Americans, is brainwashed about health care in this country. We are going to economically implode if this keeps going, both with healthcare and the economy as a whole. We are on our way to being a third world country if things don't change. The governments need to do what it is intended to do, or the government needs to do what it's intended to do, govern. Our tax money needs to go to the right things, not the wrong things. Taxes should go to healthcare and education and taking care of our infrastructure, etc. Americans need to wake up. Yeah, we spend enough to fully fund single-payer health care. We spend it every year in the weapons industry. It's insane. It's just insane. And in any given time, in any given year, one out of every six Americans is without health insurance, and that includes children. 50 million people. 50 million people without health insurance while we fund this hideous goddamn weapons industry. This year, last year, next year, every year. This is sick. Andre writes in about the caller. Michael, you are not a house. The government is us. We'll take care of you, Michael. It's okay. We love you. Prairie 2 weighs in about saving the premium. This is what these people, these right-wing insane bastards who are constantly telling us, the American public, well, you know, a health savings account. Jesus God, are you crazy? All right, Prairie 2 says, Michael wants to keep the $14,000 a year that goes to his health insurance. And if he saves that for 40 years at the current passbook rate of 0.01%, he would have almost enough to pay for a major surgery, assuming the cost doesn't go up by then. I could never figure out, from Prairie 2, I could never figure out that health savings accounts that Bush used to talk about. Bush, who has the best insurance in the world that he doesn't pay a goddamn thing for. But he wants you and me, you see, to save what? How much could you save, Truth Seeker? Let's say you're doing okay. You can save $100 a month. Whoa! At the end of the year, you got $1,200. That'll get you in to see a doctor to have a corn removed from your toe, right? Jesus, Michael. Ed writes in, for a teacher, he sure wasn't thinking for himself. Everything out of his mouth sounded like right-wing talking point, right down to the slippery slope reference. This is from Leslie. Mike, funny the way that call ended. Made me want to go screaming, too. See, Americans talk themselves into circles, talking themselves out of their own best interests. They don't get it. They just don't get it. Too selfish. They're paranoid that the government is bad and that we shouldn't take care of the other guy in the society. But this is where our taxes should go, to help society as a whole, just like you said, to add to the pot as a whole. And we use that to help each other. It makes sense. Wow, how did this brainwashing happen? How did Americans get so selfish? What happened? Ever since Reagan, we went downhill, both morally, spiritually, intellectually, and economically. Scary. Leslie. David in West Virginia writes, that caller you just had on is healthy and thinks he will live forever, so he doesn't want to pay. Perhaps he will change his tune when he is older, or when he has a family member who gets an illness. Maybe he will begin then to become more aware of his mortality and change his tune. We certainly have a shortage of empathy in this country. David. Sharon writes, Mike, that caller, Michael, who doesn't want to pay for, quote, anybody else, end quote, doesn't he realize that he shares the road with others who paid for him to drive on them? Doesn't he ever think he wouldn't have a grocery store nearby if there weren't others who needed it, too? What a selfish goon. I suggest the real others he objects to paying for have much darker skin than he does. Of course, I don't know that, but I've discovered painfully that the majority of right-wingers I've heard talking that way really object to paying, or they imagine they're paying, for blacks and browns and non-Christians, anybody different from them. It really upsets them to think their precious money will help some lowlife from the ghetto, and everybody who isn't milk-white frozen in a pew on Sunday is suspect. That's Sharon. Sandy in Portland. Mike, let me see. You really hung in there with a caller who is in complete denial about health care in this country, which is putting it mildly and very politely. I know you know these people are everywhere, from the bottom rungs to the top of the political ladder. It's scary. Would they really rather have their own children and parents eaten by and die of cancer or some other horrific disease rather than get treatment if they couldn't afford it? It seems so. I do not and will never understand it. Sandy. And Jerry in Marquette, Michigan. Mike, enjoyed your question to Michael. I would have liked to know if Michael was being paid by an evil public school system or private. Yeah, that's a good question. I find the inability to articulate exactly by people like Michael, who are opposed to single payer, a most curious and disheartening reality. Yeah, I mean, there is no question that your humble and obedient servant here gave Michael ample opportunity to just clearly, fully articulate why he's against single payer health care. And one of the emailers is right. All you hear from folks like Michael, and I'm not picking on him, you know, this is just a truth. What you hear from people like that are these so-called talking points that have been pounded into their skulls by swine and bastards and roaches like Limbaugh and Hannity and the rest of these people. And members of Congress, Republicans, who have perfect health care, paid for by us for the rest of their goddamn lives. And they're going to deny it to us. I will never, ever be able to get my head around this. Never. I can almost understand how people are so attracted to capitalism. Oh, I can be a millionaire too someday. No. No, you can't, or the odds are so stacked against you. But health care? Health care? Seven past the hour, Malloy program. All right, we have a couple more people who... All right, well, what the hell? Why not? Peter is calling from Columbus, Ohio. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. I hope you'll bear with me. If I make some remarks that are oppositional to yours, they're not intended to disparage you. I'm a physician here in town, and I am opposed to a single-payer system.
Okay, I usually don't interrupt somebody when they say something that is in opposition to what I've said. When I interrupt people is when they say things that are either grossly wrong or incredibly silly or stupid. So go
Understood.
Ahead. Take your best shot.
I'm worried, and I think it's unintended, that you may become an unwitting shill in this whole debate. And I'll only give you my personal experience as to why first as I start this. A few years ago, we had a rally here at our state house for physicians that marched against this unfair, malpractice. Malpractice, things were so high, costs. And when you looked at the slice of the pie, though, it was a small amount of really health care, if you look at the analyses. But they mobilized thousands of doctors, myself included, that made it to the state house and said, we need caps on malpractice. When the fact is, if you're a doctor who does good medicine, the risk of malpractice to the individual physician is fairly low. It's communication with the patient. So I was all proud of this that went and I rallied. And then I talked to a friend of mine who's a lawyer, and he said, well, you were taken because don't think for a minute that was physicians speaking out on their own. These were the companies, the insurance companies, who utilized and used the physicians to enact cap limits so they don't have to pay for malpractice, pay. So my concern here is under a single payer system that just like the financial industry, I think you're a little mistaken on how Medicare really works because it doesn't. And we have precedent.
No, wait, you lost me there. Your sentence started out about the financial industry and now you very quickly saying you don't think I understand how Medicare works.
What about the financial
industry?
That's what I'm saying. I just want to finish. We've seen a precedent with the financial industry where there are tons of losses. They get moved into the public sector while the financial companies make money. And I'm worried here that what will happen with a single-payer system is the same. The fact is, if you have a bad illness and you only have Medicare, you're bankrupt. Because what will happen is if you don't have a secondary insurance that you're paying for privately, you will either then move to Medicaid because your money has run out, or you will have the secondary insurance that you've paid out of pocket to cover.
Okay. All right. Let's hold if you don't mind for a second. In the first place, to use the financial services industry as an example, I think is a gross diversion on your part. The financial services industry, from the banking to the investment houses, went belly up simply because they were run by a bunch of thieves, liars, cheats, sneaks, and without government supervision, not with government supervision, totally without it. During the Clinton administration, when the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed, that was a everybody in free signal, and everybody did get in free, and the entire system has collapsed. It's not on the verge of collapsing. Now, wait, it has collapsed. Had there been government supervision of these children, that it would not have happened. That's what Glass-Steagall was all about. So your analogy is a false analogy. That's A. Here's B. Medicare relies on 20% payment other than the Medicare payment. So into that gap has stepped health insurance companies, who do the same thing to Medicare patients that they do to people who are not on Medicare. Deny their claims. Single
How are they different from the financial industry? Mitigating the losses to the taxpayers.
What?
Well, my point is, what will happen if we go to a single-payer system? The government is not going to employ all of these people who suddenly appear out of the woodwork to run it. They are going to join forces with these experts. And my point is, what I want to get across here is that insurers are making a lot of money. The House will always win. You by yourself have said the government right now is run by corporations. Corporations are not going to lose when we go to a single-payer system. In fact, they will win.
How?
Simply because they will be used as consultants. We will still use it like Medicare is used. Medicare, or Medicaid, forgive me, I work with the homeless. Medicaid is not run by the government. They outsource to many private health medical plans. Maybe people don't know this, but there are four or five managed care companies
let me get you to hit your pause button again for 1 second. You realize, of course, that you are making an argument for legitimate single-payer health care. I use Medicare as an example of single-payer for one simple reason. The government makes the payment to the health care provider, 80% of the payment. Of course it's a flawed system, but it's the best damn system that we've had in this country to pull old people out of either A, poverty, or premature death.
Now, we're on the verge of bankruptcy because the system is not by any means a good system. It is about to collapse under its own weight. And just like the individual who doesn't have secondary insurance would collapse without that under Medicare and a secondary, that loss will then go to the taxpayers, and it will fall under our own weight.
But, Peter, once again, you're making a false argument. The reason Medicare is ready to collapse is because it is not adequately funded. Who pays for Medicare? We have chump change taken out of our paychecks. Even Medicare recipients are charged out of their Social Security check. It is failing not because it's a failure of a system, but because it's not adequately funded. Do you agree with that?
I don't know that I necessarily.
No! Don't fall on the. I don't know. That's what the school teacher did to me. Use Michael or Peter.
Peter, I'm sorry.
Peter, you have an analytical mind. If you are telling me the system is failing, then let me ask you, why is it failing?
The reason that it is failing is because there is always a payer of last resort. The government.
In other words,
the taxpayers.
In other words, but you're saying what I'm saying, because it's not adequately funded.
It's not because it's adequately funded. There is a disincentive across all the ways to cut costs because government is owning
this. Peter, what is your solution?
My solution is there's a couple things. One thing I want to say in principle is, on one end, you talk about how corporations run the government.
Peter, I don't have much time. What is your solution?
Well, first off, we have to look. Michael's idea of think about how people think about home insurance. You worry about what you're going to put to your home insurance as a claim because you're worried you might lose it. We have to change the way that we understand insurance. The reason that insurance is so bad is because we've pulled it under jobs, and any corporation is going to cut costs and give you the cheapest insurance. We can fund it through the government to figure out how we can properly have the people empowered to make the right choices for their insurance, but not have employers who say, give me the cheapest thing because I want to make a profit. So insurance has to change, and we have to figure out a way of properly funding it without disincentivizing those that don't have means, but make large deductibles. Because in situations where people can't afford it, in my practice day to day, we have to make tough decisions that are appropriate but are cheaper. So if people know that they're going to have to pay maybe the first $5,000 or $10,000, if you can afford it, then maybe they'll go back to their doctor and say, doctor, we really need to do this test because I owe some of this responsibility, as opposed to a single payer where I don't care, it's paid for.
And then what happens when the test comes back and says, well, you have metastasized colon cancer, then what?
Well, you'll have your insurance. But if it's under a system you're looking at the end game and you don't see the beginning part.
Okay,
of the
all right, Peter, I'm sorry. I'm out of time. I'm sorry. I have to take a break. I'm not trying to cut you off. But what you are delivering to me and this audience tonight is a bunch of slippery words that literally mean nothing. But thanks for the try.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
Yeah, okay. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we are going to do the second giveaway of the Malloy podcast subscription, which means that at the bottom of the hour, we're going to clear the lines and start over again. So if you've been holding on for a while, you can call back in. You'll survive. All right, we have somebody else here now. Ross, who says he's a medical student and a Republican, and you oppose single payer. Ross, let me just start out right away. Why do you oppose it?
Well, I think that I oppose it because the left has made this argument that...
You're already slopping around into political jargon. Let's not talk about the left. Let's not... Tell me why you, Ross, oppose single payer health care.
Because I don't think that it's the best option for the physician and
okay.
for the patient.
Okay. The who? The physician
the
and the
physician
patient?
And for the patient.
Why is it not the best option?
Because I don't think that the government has a place in between the physician and in between
the government is not between the physician and the patient in single payer. The government only sends you, the doctor, a check. What are you talking about, Ross?
Well, for one thing, you were talking about Medicare. It takes the government months to finally reimburse the physicians, and
not true. Maybe you know a doctor who can't file his papers properly. It does not take months. And besides, that is another false argument. What would you suggest in place of single payer?
Well, I think that there are other options that we need to look at, and one of them was what our President Barack Obama had targeted when he was speaking to the American Medical Association. He started by saying that malpractice, he knows malpractice is a huge liability in the healthcare
industry. It is not. Malpractice accounts for about 0.1% of medical costs. Who has told you differently? Honest to God, Ross, I'm trying to be a nice liberal talk show host. Who has told you that malpractice is a major factor in medical costs? Who's told you that? Have any of your professors told you that?
No, certainly not my professors. Physicians have.
Well, that medical malpractice is a major factor in medical the cost of medical care in this country. Are you serious? I'll have to take your word for it. I have a physician. My wife has a physician. My kid has a physician. Never, Never have I heard them say, because we talk about this, what is the biggest factor in medical costs in this country? What they never say, well, the cost of my malpractice insurance. Never. So you listen to those doctors and I listen to these. Michael, what's your solution? Okay, Michael, I can't just sit here and you know, wait for you to answer. I can't do it because that's called dead air. So I'll move on. Or not Michael, Ross. Maybe he didn't answer because I called him Michael. Sorry, Ross, but I have to say you just sound, once again, grossly misinformed. Even the doctor from Columbus, Ohio, was not making what I think any logical person would consider a rational response to why we should not have single-payer health care. What is it about this that has people this crazy in opposition to it? I can't help but say that most of the people who are in opposition to it, when you try to pin them down, they cannot give you a good reason why. The doctor in Columbus, Michael in Huntsville, and Ross, the medical student, I have yet to hear a good reason, a logical, rational, reasonable reason why single payer is not good. What I hear when people do try to articulate, well, I don't want the government in between me and my doctor. That's not what happens. That's not what single payer is. Well, I'm afraid of a slippery slope. What slippery slope? We have to and the doctor from Columbus starts giving me all these generalities. I'm not interested in generalities. I am looking for specifics. Well, we have to restructure and do this and do that. Hog snot. What we have to do is realize that single payer is the only way if we want to insure everybody in this country and make it feasible and reasonable and affordable. I don't get this. Everybody knows that roughly 22 to 35% of every goddamn dollar that is spent on medical care in this country goes to an insurance company's profit. But that never comes up in the discussion, does it? Insurance companies are ghouls. They're beasts. They're bastards. They make profit on somebody else's suffering. And in the process of, oh, I know, I'm starting to sound like it's a bedtime story. And in the process of doing that, they have the power to deny a sick person care based on some goddamn filthy formula that has nothing to do with wellness, nothing to do with taking care of a person, and everything to do with a bottom line profit. Well, I've had enough.
Oh, and I don't know what to do. Well, my doctor gave me up. He said I can't do no more for you.
Are you talking? It's time once again for Mike Malloy. No, wait a minute. It's time once again for the podcast trivia segment of the program, wherein, thanks to the generosity of one of our listeners who provided the funds for 10, count them, 10 podcast subscriptions, we are giving away two every Friday night. Oh, I know. It's Thursday night. That's because we will not be here tomorrow night. Well, we will, but only in rebroadcast form, and next Friday we will not have returned. So tonight we are giving away the second of these. This would be the third one, actually, altogether, of the 10 that was provided by our generous, extremely generous listener who did this for the sheer hell of it. So, and in the good nature of his heart. So, we are going to begin now with Mike, who is in Southport, Florida. Is that correct, Mike?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and now you realize what's going on here. You are in an isolation booth, so to speak. We're going to ask you a question, and if you get the right answer, you win a subscription to the podcast of this program.
All right.
Why in God's name would you want that?
Oh man! Well, for one thing, I'm trying to live off Social Security right now.
That's all you have to say. Okay. All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go. This is multiple choice. At the 2008 G8 summit in Japan, what did Bush call out in greeting to the Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi? Did he call out A, "Will you invite me back to France"? B, "Amigo, amigo." C, "Awesome suit." D, "Want to go get a pizza?"
Oh, wow. That's a toughie, Mike.
Do you want to hear the question again?
No. Well, I want to hear the answers again.
What did Bush call out to the Italian Prime Minister? A, "Will you invite me back to France?" B, "Amigo, amigo." C, "Awesome suit." D, "Want to get a pizza?"
I'm going to go for "Amigo, amigo." That sounds like Bush.
"Amigo, amigo"?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you're kidding.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have another winner.
That was just a guess on Bush's stupidity.
All right, Mike, you know the drill here. Hold on. I'm going to put you on hold.
I really appreciate it.
Well,
and thanks to Mr. Anonymous, too.
Yeah, really. Thanks to him. All right, Mike, hold on, and Kathy will get the information. Boy, I wouldn't have gotten that one. That he was right. That was a toughie. I would have picked A, "When you invite me back to France." You're such a dumbass, right? Way to go, Mike. All right. Now I need to, oh my God, we're not going to get to a moment with Bob. I guess we're not. Cause we're just flat running out of time. Well, it'll be here when we get back, right? Sorry, Bob. But Bob Alexander's op-ed pieces are timeless, so we'll get to it. Now, I've just gotten an overwhelming number of emails here regarding the three people who have called in opposition to single-payer health care. You know, I've stated for the record many times, I don't understand the resistance. I don't. I don't care if it's somebody who's 90 years old, somebody who is a medical student, somebody who's a doctor, somebody who is a former factory worker, somebody who works in an office, anybody. I don't get it. The only thing that I hear from people who are opposed to single payer is what I hear when I choose to listen, which is very infrequently, to these right wingers who do on radio, who do everything they can in their role as protectors of corporate America to bust single payer as some sort of a plot to do this and do that and take away that and alter this and do that. And none of it is true. None of it. So let's start with David, who writes in, "Mike, it's amazing how so many criticize Medicare because they feel government insurance doesn't work, not realizing that the difficulties in Medicare exist because it's not socialized enough. Medicare in this country is largely subsidy capitalism, not socialism." But of course, wasn't that George Bush's plan all along with his prescription drug program to kill Medicare? David, yes, you're right, David, it was. Remember the prescription drug plan, huh? Part of Medicare, no bid contracts. The government is just going, no bids, no competitive pricing. No. George Bush's prescription Medicare prescription thing was a beautiful handoff to the drug companies. Oh, oh my God. From Dan. Mike, the doctor exposed himself as nothing more than a servant of greed and power, both his own and his corporate masters. His comments about making tough decisions, etc., truly turned my stomach. I worked, paid taxes, remained healthy, and maintained insurance that I really have ever used for nearly 35 years. Then I was injured in a work accident. Doctors and insurance companies determined that I would not return to work and placed permanent restrictions on me. They decided, not me. I am 58 years old and suddenly uninsurable. Without Social Security and Medicare, I am dead. Period. However flawed and inadequate Medicare may be, it is fundamental survival. When a doctor gauges your medical treatment by financial abilities, they are unfit to practice medicine. Dan. From Bruce, it would be cheaper if we had single payer because we pay per capita twice as much as the most expensive country, France, where they have so many doctors that they send one out with every ambulance. We rank 29th when all measures of care are considered. We could have better care than we get now and pay half as much. From the Foxhole Atheist, Mike, in my family, we do something called connecting the dots. So here I go. Campaigns are funded by multinational companies that then are allowed to write the laws of this nation. Large companies like, say, insurance companies bleed us dry so they can fund campaigns. We, the poor unwashed masses, are then voluntarily paying for the large insurance companies to write laws that are killing the 30 million that don't have medical insurance. I am one of those already sentenced to death by those with health insurance. I want this to sink in. If you are paying for health insurance, you are paying to kill people like me, a father, a veteran, a student, and don't forget my 7-year-old daughter. You are also paying to kill. Thank you, greedy, cowardly, ignorant, hateful Americans. The Foxhole Atheist. From Sandy in Portland, Mike, I'm listening to the doctor's contorted and twisted illogic and language on how he'd fix, quote, quote, our broken healthcare system. All I can think of is how easy it is to cover all Americans in three words, single payer healthcare. People understand it, which is probably why it'll never happen. Sandy in Portland. Kevin in Madison, Wisconsin writes, Mike, I suppose that that supposed teacher arguing against single payer is like a freeper. I've been hearing that lame take responsibility line all day on most of the progressive shows. Different voices, same insane line of reasoning. Well, I know. I don't say it on the air because why bother? You all understand. A lot of these people, through their web connections and going to these right-wing sites are told, yeah, call those liberal talk shows, the three or four that are left, and tell them why it's crazy. Except what these right-wing crazy people don't understand is that they have no argument that's based in logic, no argument that's based in common sense, no argument worth a damn in arguing against single payer. It is insane to present that argument. It is clearly someone who has taken leave of their senses to say, no, I don't want government health care payment plan. I don't want to be able to choose my own doctor. I don't want to be able to get whatever I need in terms of health care. I don't want to have the term pre-existing conditions disappear. I don't want to have healthy children. I don't want my parents and or me to be healthy. What I want is health so-called insurance companies who take 35% of my healthcare dollar and stuff it in their goddamn pockets and hand it to their investors. I want a healthcare system where they have cadres of people who are trained to deny me benefits. I want a healthcare system where if I inadvertently fill in my application wrong, 27 years later, when I've got prostate cancer, the insurance company can say, sorry, you lied on your application. You get no insurance. What in the Christ's name is wrong with people? Well, I'm getting too caught up in the insanity of people who are so willing to argue against their own best interests. I really am. I don't get you, people. I don't care what your position is in life. I don't get you that you argue against single payer. And every time I ask one of you why, you can't answer.
One I know goes away in the year, and you could have it all.
I still like that song after 40 years. I still like that song. Oh, my God. Thanks to the crew once again tonight. Ben Birch, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and Catherine Bay. And once again, tomorrow night's program on The Molloy Show will be a rebroadcast. Do you know which one it is, Kathy? You do? Oh, you don't want to share that? Okay. And all next week, Brad Friedman will be sitting in for me. Go to bradblog.com if you want a preview of... most of you know who he is. He's one of the people who have fought tirelessly to expose election fraud in this country, among other things. And he'll be sitting in all next week. What? You have something? What? What do you got?
It's the one where you punk the Reverend from Wasilla.
Oh, okay. All right. That's a good one. We will be back the 29th of June. And I hope you will, too. Tad in Vancouver, Washington writes, Mike, I was a union carpenter for 20 years building high-rises and bridges. I'm now disabled. For 20 years, I was 10 feet tall and bulletproof. Okay, maybe not. After 3 hernias, multiple broken bones, and now 3 crushed discs in my neck that have caused me to have a migraine-like headache for 2 years, I can no longer work a job that fed and housed my family and one that I truly loved. I have had more experience than most with for-profit health care. And now I watch as the whores in D.C. blank the insurance companies, Big Pharma, and the AMA while leaving us behind. I really should not listen to you because it just makes my head hurt worse because of the hypocrisy of the people that are supposed to be on our side. Single payer is the only thing that can save us. Please ask these blanks how it is that other countries cover their entire populations for less than we do. It's got me almost to the point where I'm going to start drinking again. Tad in Vancouver. No, don't do that, Tad. I've just got so many of them here. This is from Michael, who writes, I thought it was interesting that the doctor used malpractice reform as an example of being set up. What he seemed unable or unwilling to do when asked how that applied to single payer was to divine a motive on the part of who was setting him up. In the case of malpractice insurers, they are a profit-making entity. And they were seeking to reduce their costs and therefore increase their profits. So where's the profit-making entity and the motive behind single payer? There isn't one. and none of the profit-making entities are for it or want it or anything resembling it. The only people in favor of single payer are the people. Michael in Roswell. What else we got here? All right. This is from Thomas. Let me see. Yeah, Thomas in Rochester, New York. Hi, Mike. I'm a doctor, and I pray we have a single-payer program because my staff spends way too much time contacting all these insurance companies. I want one set of diagnosis codes, one set of procedure codes, one address to send to send the claims to, and one telephone number for my biller to call if there's a question with the claim. For each patient, we need to call for authorization because even the patients have no idea what their coverage is. Let's keep it simple. A side note, when I moved from New York to California in 1997, my health insurance premium went up from $147 a month to $553 a month, even though I was in perfect health and had not even sent in a claim. Just relocating caused the premium to increase. That's my personal story and why I hate these insurance hogs. Thomas, who's a doctor in Rochester, New York. Who's this from? This is an answer to Peter. This is from Anticat, who writes, oh no, it's from Deborah. Deborah writes, okay, I am bright and analytical too. He said that the problem is once the Medicaid and or other insurance fails, the problem is that then the taxpayer has to pay. Okay, fine, but he just blew his own argument. Why not let the taxpayer pay from the get-go and cut out the middleman, the insurance companies? Wouldn't that be cheaper for the taxpayers? Why are we paying layers of insurance companies when if the claim is too big or the patient too Why are we paying layers of insurance companies if the claim is too big, the patient is too old, or the condition is pre-existing, etc.? Yeah, that's the point. I mean, my God, you have health insurance, and usually there's a cap on it. But let's say there's not. You know, they will allow you so much for your the lifetime of your policy, no matter what sort of disease or illness you might contract. I'm going to get too far into it and we don't have enough time. There is a very simple, to me anyway, but I'm a simple person. There's a very simple answer to this. Insurance companies, health insurance companies are there to make money. They are not there to make sure that your bills are paid. Jesus Christ, why is that so hard to understand? They are there to deny your claim and to make a profit. The more claims they deny, the more profit they make. Why is that hard to understand? And since that is that's the formula, why is it also hard to understand that it screws you? No, I'm out of time. Hey, listen, have a good week. Behave yourselves while I'm gone, okay? I'll see you on the 29th. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Did you know that if you...